So, call the meeting to order, and I'll entertain a motion to approve the agenda.
So moved.
So moved by Ms. Grant.
Second.
Okay, moved and seconded. So, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Agenda's approved. Okay, then the minutes, just one thing. The draft just doesn't have me as attending, even though I was the chairman, so we just have to fix that. Other than that, I didn't hear
anything. I think we should read it out.
Okay. All right. Do you want to have a substitute motion? Okay. I entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
So moved.
Move on. Ms. Grumman.
Second.
Okay, second. Okay, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Okay, minutes are approved. Now, I'll just insert myself in there as somebody attending. And then moving right down the agenda, I don't think this is going to be a really long meeting. Hopefully not. So most of it's to talk about the public presentation. Just the first item on the agenda, updating on the cooperation with the other counties. We talked about this last time. When we get to the public presentation part, there's a revised video that hopefully sends a clearer message about it. But just so you guys are aware, we've met with the sheriffs of the other counties, and we so far, as far as commissioners go, we met with Hamlin County by conference call. So we had a good discussion. I couldn't see their faces because both commissions meet at roughly the same time. So, but they asked a lot of good questions, and so you know this is the same sheet that you had last time. It's in your minutes. It's attached to the minutes that you have. So we'll see what's happening there. We're going to call. We're going to talk to Dual County next week. So another conference call most likely. So joining them in their commission meeting. So just making sure they know what we're talking about. And again, the basic message is, you know, if you want to participate, these are some of the ways we're looking at. We know the figures might not be exact, but we want to give you an idea. So this is stuff for you to think about. And so one question I had was surprising when we were on the Hamlin call was one commissioner said, okay, if we do option one, which is where you basically buy into the bond of the jail at whatever number of beds you want, what happens, what kind of rate do I get on additional beds? So that was something I hadn't thought about, so we have to think about that. But that was kind of, I didn't expect that question. I thought, like, they would just sit quietly and not ask anything. So, so yeah. That was good.
Thank you.
Yeah. Any other questions on that one? Okay. And then on the soil borings, so that's in motion. That ought to happen in the next couple weeks. So Geotech will do the borings both at 212. I spoke to the mayor briefly about just making sure it's okay that we do borings on the auditorium block. So there's still probably a little bit of detailed coordination, but they didn't have a problem with that. Yeah. So.
And it'll be important to if the parking lot's being used, they're going to have to kind of block off the area where they're doing the borings during that time, just to make sure people don't accidentally pull in there and they'll fill up the holes when they're done.
Yeah. And I skipped item.
How deep do they go?
I think we said 25 feet.
It's 20 or 25.
And
so.
Have you given them the GPS coordinates?
Yep,
and
exactly.
So they know the building is on
that? Yeah. What we did is we typically take corners and locations of the buildings. I think it was six borings per each site.
Yeah, if you want, it's interesting, the diagrams that Bruce sent them. I can email them to you. They're kind of interesting.
Yeah, we review that with our structural, just to make sure we have a good sampling of where what the condition is.
It wouldn't do much good to drill four holes out where it's just going to be very new to where the building is.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just farmer.
Okay. And then on the, we've been talking a little bit about the options and to kind of what we do, and particularly phasing. And you know, we actually have the option of doing the whole thing, be it, you know, one of the option 1B or 1A or 3A or 3B, so the whole 33 or something million dollar option, or we've been talking about the tiered ballot where we just focus on the jail. What I asked Bruce and company to come up with maybe something that was a little bit more in between, that we could answer some of the needs of the courthouse with that, and still, so we'd still have something that's usable until, if we did an initial phase, maybe a little bit bigger initial phase, so we'd still have something that would be usable until we could get to the rest of the courthouse, basically. And so, Bruce, do you want to talk about that a little bit? And then, do you have that?
That one diagram?
Yeah.
Do you want me to pull that up?
Yeah, that would be good. I think. Your Honor, you can sit up here.
I tell you what, I'm on call tonight.
Okay.
So I might get a call, so it would be easier if I sneak out the back way here.
Sure.
Thank you.
So everybody remembers, you know, out of the options we looked at, 1A and 1B, 1A being at the auditorium site with the entire judicial kind of services over at that site, sheriff, jail, courts. 1B was doing just the jail only and the sheriff's operations there. I'm sorry. Yeah, 1A, 1B. And then 3A, of course, is 212, and the same kind of thing. 3A was doing everything. 3B was just the jail only. So the A is complete project. B is the partial project.
Well, it's two separate sites.
Yeah, and two separate sites, exactly. Yeah. And then the other thing we talked about today as a kind of a modified version was that especially, I think the idea was that really just this portion here, this kind of area in the red box that's hazed out, we'll send up a cleaner version that everybody can see. But the idea would be to, right now the building does not have good accessibility, does not have any security, and when we say accessibility, it's you know, get into the building through a lift. You got to use this main elevator here to get up and down, and the current restrooms are not accessible. So what this would do is build on a secured access point along with a stair, elevator, and accessible restroom. So using this would at least help kind of get to that portion of a modified version.
Yeah. So basically, what this is, you know, we've been talking about like the $16 million focus on the jail phase. This would add a little bit to that. Is kind of what if maybe that would be our lower cost option. So, and can you put that back up again, Bruce?
Yeah. Just,
so do you remember what this diagram is? This is from. This is what the courthouse would look like with the A options, so the 1A and the 3A, where the jail is separate and we still continue to use the current courthouse. And so this is, so one of the, I don't know if you guys want to talk about some of the advantages and disadvantages of this. On the one hand, you know, we deal with the ADA issues in the courthouse and right off the bat.
It provides, for whatever use of the building, whether it's holy courts, you know, holy government services, whatever, or a partial mix, it provides security access to it, as well as it provides all the handicap accessibility for the entire building, for restrooms and access to all the floors. So this addition, you know, and again, I think this helps too, especially, well, say you built an entirely new justice center and courts and everything moved over there. Now, when we say courts and everything, just to make it clear, to get maximum utilization out of this existing courthouse, we've talked about state attorney and court services staying in this facility. So they're going to continue to use it. So we're building less and utilizing this building more. Doing this allows for that security access, it allows for those other pieces of it.
And then later on, say if we did it, we wanted to do the, where we just add space to the courthouse, you could still build on to that addition.
Exactly. This provides a long-term expansion as well. You're absolutely right, Lee. Because by doing this, you could plan this in a way that you could, if the county ever needed more space, government services, judicial systems, anything, you could easily expand down on this kind of southwest side.
But the big disadvantage is temporarily, at least, you don't have the full National Center for State Courts solution that they recommended in the report. So does everybody get what we're talking about? I'm sorry, I cut you off, Bruce.
Yeah, and I we'll add another graphic because we want to make sure it's very, very clear. You know, when we talked about these options, is this the one? I mean, again, the two options that we're now looking at are 1 and B, and I think what we'll do is show how that courthouse relation is part of this analysis, part of this solution. So I think putting it all in one sheet that shows these additions plus what's going on over there would help to kind of further define it. In the phased option, we're also going to put a graphic together too that that shows that, you know, basically it'll help to identify a little bit more that what exactly is done in phase one. If site one, the auditorium site is the one that you proceed with and it gets voted on and goes ahead, okay, what is phase one, what is phase two, if it's a phase project.
Okay.
And phase one would be, you know, if it's phased, phase one is building the jail and supporting sheriff space as needed to accommodate that building and utilizing the auditorium, as well as we're currently have money in there to wait to do it right now for that additional. So when we looked at the revised cost estimate, which was this number here, this is if you're doing the entire project, this roughly, and again, construction cost is about $27 million. With soft cost, it's 27 plus roughly that 5, so about $33 million, or
yeah, 33
6 million. So $33 million, including soft cost. And then when you look at the phased approach, so the phased approach then is what's on the top is building the jail, some additional upgrades to the auditorium to make it usable, and then that entrance, that access, that security and the ADA accessibility piece to the existing courthouse, as well as some garage space. So the phased is roughly $17 million construction and about another $3 million soft cost. So if you did it in phases, it's going to be 17 plus 3, so about $20 million for the first phase. And then there's actually an error in a note right here. This phased option is really to then build on, plan for that jail to go get a second level for courts. And so the second phase is then to build the entire judicial system on the second level at a later date. And per this analysis, we escalated that out to year 2022. And that was about $17 million.
So to everybody get this, this is just another idea on how, if we were to do the, you know, take it in bites, in chunks.
Yeah.
So if you did the phase project and you did the jail, the first part there, for $20 million, and the voters say yes, to do the second part, you're going to have to go back to the voters to get the other $16 million or $17 million?
We have to, whether or not it's, yeah.
But how... I mean, so you did it 5 years later. You still wouldn't have the first one paid for.
No, it's not. You're probably going to do a 20 or 25 year bond.
Yeah. So then it's just going to add that much.
Yeah.
Well, see, but again, the whole bonding structure is going to have to be analyzed again later down the road. If there's increased population in the community, that's going to help to create a more solid tax base. If there's a current debt that the county has that rolls off at that point in time, when it comes to financing, you have to talk to Toby.
Yeah, I think that's a good.
Because the other thing they look at is wraparound bonds too. And once you pay a certain portion off, you can wrap another one into it. So they have other options for that.
So bond overlap is kind of your question. And I've thought about that too. So let me talk to Toby Morris and see what, you know, research what the that would be like.
The judicial system, including courts, sheriff's operations and jail, clearly in the study that's been done and what we've seen, all has needs and needs to be addressed. In our opinion, one of the most critical aspects, really, one of the most critical aspects right now is the jail. You've got liabilities issues, you have lack of space. I mean, that, in my opinion, has some of the most severe issues. Not that they don't all have some space requirements, it has some of the most severe. The two-phased approach allows it to be addressed and address it over time for a less initial cost. If you add the two together, you know, that roughly $37 million for those two versus...
33.
Yeah. So you're paying more for escalation. You're going to pay more for bonding because it's going to be a second bond analysis and all that bonding fee that goes with that. But it's allowing it to be a smaller initial project, I should say.
Okay.
So, and because the one thing I just want to make sure we're all clear on, can you scroll back down there, Bruce? So remember before the phase one was in the $16 million range. Now, this is just another idea. to add in that piece of the courthouse, and so that first phase would be a $20 million something.
Yeah,
we
did add this $2 million yeah. number here for that court's ADA so, security from what you all last saw.
So we're not just talking about just the jail, at least.
So, another question on that. So you're talking about an addition to the courthouse, which would be on the west side of it, mm-hmm. and it's just basically an entryway, elevator, and bathrooms.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And you just and you could do security.
So it's not that big, but your picture
it's about 1,000 square feet per floor.
Because your picture shoot,
if you look kind of big. I know what you mean in the picture.
The picture yeah. compared to the courthouse, it looked like it was 3/4. You know.
Yeah, it does look pretty big, though. It wouldn't be that big. There's some space. Well, you know, anyway, I'm not going to get into the nuances. Whenever you do a true lobby that you're going to do security screening, you need space to allow people to queue into the area, into the building. I mean, you've all gone through airport lines where you're coming through the scanner here and you're 5 miles away. I mean, you have to allow for whatever the frequency of the facility is, you have to allow for some kind of queuing space. It can be used or not used as well. I mean, we have done, I did the Oklahoma courthouse years ago, and we designed it to have a security screening in their main state court facility, and they decided they'd use that at a later date, but at least we designed it. So that's what makes that a little bit larger.
Okay. So if you were to build on top of the jail, would it be safe to house inmates?
Oh, yeah. The trickiest thing with building for vertical expansion, and we did it with Mille Lacs County years ago, is your mechanical systems. And actually your ventilation systems, too. There's some nuances to it. And again, you don't have Department of Correction standards, but we're going to do things in accordance with ACA guidelines and requirements. So the idea of natural lighting, well, typically a lot of facilities we do, you'll have skylights in there into the day rooms that then can get barred light into the cells. If you are planning vertical expansion, depending upon how it's planned, actually, now that I think about that, we planned that, Tom, in a way that when we did it, the footprint would expand over the support areas of the jail, the booking, the kitchen, those areas, and we were trying to separate housing so we don't impact any skylights or things like that. There's ways to get around it. You can do barred light through chases, barred light through the rear. Yeah. There's ways to get around it. But the mechanical system is the one that you have to be careful that you're not... You're probably going to have mechanical units. Do you temporarily set them on an outside or a different area? We would, knowing there's vertical expansion, we would try to look for other options. It was like when we did Mille Lacs County, not to get off on another project, but it was another jail project that they currently had housing underneath. We literally had to practically tent the building while they built this new, basically built the frame up, put the roof on it, and closed it, and brought back the mechanical systems. But we had the temporary things up.
It's not a slam dunk, but it could be done. Yep. Like Bruce said, we would be building it over the housing area, something over the support spaces. So.
But you'd want to, you know, if you thought that was possible, I mean, that's part of the expansion strategy. I mean, just in case, and maybe worth, you know, say the cost of the heavier duty joists and things like that, you know, that's, we're going to have to think about that a little bit as we closer, but we'll talk about a little bit later. We'll talk about the decision points that we need to be able to do that. So I think that's covered on that. Any other questions on this kind of variation?
If we did the whole thing on the city auditorium lot, would we not need this then?
If that's a good question. So
it's less of an issue. I mean, you still have accessibility issues in that building.
Yeah.
But to tell you the truth, if it's less of a security access issue, then you pretty much can live with what's there for a while.
And then if you put this on, every time that we go in to get license plates or with the auditor, we'd have to go through the security, or would we still be able to come in?
That would be optional.
Main door.
You turn it on and off.
Staff it. Yeah. So you're either going to staff it or you're not going to staff it. And again, for the government functions that you have there, you know, it's really more the court's issues. I'm trying to think where we've seen the most volatile action. It's a lot of times it's the court, family court, and things like this where you see some more of the volatile situations. it's not normally your assessor or your license bureau, you know, so it's not normally those folks. So, you know, I think the biggest thing this gives you is the ability to secure it, but also the accessibility issues as well.
Could you ever do it, say, where you could make it so the security check area was something else you could add on in the future? I mean, could you do it that way, or is that getting too...
Security check.
So you just worry about the stairwell, the elevator shaft, and the ADA stuff?
You know, the security screen really only happens on the first level.
Yeah. You just have to set everything back far enough to allow that to happen. Yeah. So I think it's something to reconsider a little bit. I mean,
we
did this revised estimate to allow for that in the courthouse in this phased approach.
Yeah. So that's
I'm not sure how critical it is. Yeah,
that's a disadvantage of you know, if we decide in the end that we're going to go with the, you know, the Justice Center thing. I mean, we could still, you know, bond that much and then not use it. I mean, that's you know, that's a possibility as well. So, okay. Any other questions on that? But as people have ideas, you know, we want to put these ideas out there so that we're turning over in our mind, because we're going to get it, when we're able to figure out the auditorium block with the city, then we're going to have to say, okay, this is what we're going to recommend, and that's, we want to be ready to do that. Okay.
Our personal opinion is, while you could do that to the courthouse, it's more important if court stays there for any period of time.
Yeah.
If courts stay there for any period of time, to have that additional security is important. If it's going to be moved over to the other facility, it's much less important, I think.
Yeah.
And I think didn't we look at an opportunity to do court security screening up on the courts level? I thought we kind of looked at that and thought that was a viable option.
You could make it so that that could phase into this. I mean, that would be a pretty inexpensive thing, you know, securing that stairway and. And that could.
There's another thought that I was thinking, or thought of.
Before you get to the elevator.
Before you get to anywhere on the second floor.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's what I thought. I think that's probably a more viable approach in that addition, to be quite honest with you.
Just okay.
I think it's a better utilization of money than spending it on that.
Okay. All right. Well, that's something. Okay. Sounds like we need to ponder this a bit.
Well, I'm going to make the changes and let you all determine. But from our standpoint,
that would be pretty inexpensive to do that option. But it secures the space as it is now in its unexpanded, you know, setup, and
it doesn't cure the problem of the ADA issues.
We had $600,000 in a single phased for the, it said existing facilities remodeling, well, it's existing courts remodeling, was a $600,000 number, which was for some remodeling for state attorney and court services, and it was also for that potential security in that. So we did have a plug number in there for courthouse remodeling in the single phase approach.
Were you thinking of something?
Another thought is, it's probably... I think it's acceptable and doable if the option is to go across the street, that the state's attorney office stays in the courthouse. But if it's the 212 option, I really think that there should be, the state's attorney should go with the Justice Center out there, because you're talking a longer distance, you know, separation. When it's just across the street, I can understand that, but when you're talking a whole couple miles away.
Well, and then if you're going to take the state attorney, you're going to take court services to it. Mm-hmm. Judge, in your opinion, it's a much more efficient operations if state attorney and court services are all with the judicial group, correct?
I would agree with that.
And clerk of courts.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, they'll already be with them. They definitely will be.
These are the kind of issues, these kind of smaller variations that we're probably going to need to talk about. And I'm hopeful that in a couple weeks we'll be able to sit down with the city with some appraisal data and talk about something.
But we're going to put together an executive summary. And I think as part of that executive summary and recommendation that we're going to put together, I think one of it's going to be the operational impact versus the construction cost of the 212 site. I mean, there's a construction cost impact and an operational cost of state attorney court services being here versus there. We've already done the analysis. It's just putting it together in a final summary.
Okay.
I heard you guys on the radio this morning, and then that was part of it with the 212 was the fact of the operational. But in our very first plan, we had it all in one. When we went out on the west site, we had the court state's attorney.
Yeah, it's all one
all
big
of
old,
it.
Yeah.
Highway patrol, everybody, emergency management, everybody was in that building.
Yeah, I think your concern though was with if you do one of the one B. What was it? Where you had the separate facility, the jail separated from the, that was your concern, right? So if you had the jail as a separate place and that separate place is 212, leaving the state's attorney and the court services back at the court.
No. I wasn't really doing the 1B to 1A difference. What I was saying is, okay, first of all, my opinion, I think it needs to be the full justice center wherever it is. Mm-hmm. But if it's across the street, and the state's attorney just has to go across the street when they go to court or whatever. That's acceptable to me.
Yeah. Okay.
But if you got the Justice Center out on 212, I am picturing they're probably going to be going back and forth like all the time, and mm-hmm. and court services same thing.
Yep.
It's like that's just crazy. They should all be together.
Yep. And if it's another, you know, whatever that space is, say it's $1 million for to build that additional space out there. But say the operational impact is a couple $100,000 a year. Well, you know, what is that return on that investment? If it's a continual, ongoing issue, because again, part of what we're looking at too is good appropriate utilization of the courthouse. There seemed to be concern at the last go round that, you know, people thought that courthouse was going to be abandoned and it wasn't going to be used or whatever. And we want to make it clear that, you know, what we're trying to do in this study is do what's appropriate and make sense, but also utilize the existing buildings as much as possible, too. So mm-hmm. it's a balancing act.
Yeah. Okay. So,
do we want to talk about the do-nothing scenario, Lord?
Let's do that as we talk about the public presentation that's in there. So, do you want to talk about that a little bit? Then we'll just...
Because then you have that on your laptop, right?
I got the...
I have the do-nothing.
Yeah. If you have that handy.
If
you have that PDF handy, you might as well open it.
So one of the other things we started to talk about is you know, the do nothing analysis. We kind of summarize this, and there's, you know, people need to understand that there's impacts to not doing anything. I mean, if you don't do anything, there are impacts. Well, you know, this document starts to talk about possible impacts. Well, in Bill Garnos's report, he talked about based on the physical plant, the size and condition of the existing jail, really based on ACA standards, you shouldn't have more than 62 inmates. There's liability risk, there's safety risk, just inmates and staff when you start to push over that. That's why they create these standards for the types of spaces, the sizes of spaces. If you're truly going to comply and minimize the liability to the county, you're going to reduce your occupancy of your jail. You're going to come back and say, you know what, ACA standards say this. This is what our occupancy should be. If you reduce, so your average inmate population, I think recently has been in the 75 to 80 range, somewhere in there. And I think based on Garnos's report, you know, projection of inmates, we all know, is a fluctuating thing. It depends on crime. It depends on, you know, all kinds of other factors going on in the world, law changes and so on and so forth. The temperament of a judge one day versus the next. We have had some judges that are more inclined to give different sentences. We've had others in some counties where they've been very, very lenient, in my opinion. But all those things impact what happens in the jail as well as being able to process them through the system well enough. Mm-hmm. All those have impacts of potential growth. The future construction costs. So we do know that inflation occurs in construction. What it costs to build a building yesterday is more expensive today. I mean, things get more costly over time.
I did add one to this, Judge, which I didn't know. I just added it more for discussion. If the state attorney and court services are out of space, is there a point in time where they're not going to be able to even fit in the building where they are currently? I don't know that. Are they going to? Would there be a time that if they increase, if your caseload increases, if you have to have more probation officers, more attorneys to handle some of these caseloads, would there be ever a point where you'd have to rent an office in town because there's just no room in that building?
I think we might be approaching that right now. Okay. We have a full-time magistrate judge that was added to the staffing levels here and chambered here in Watertown. And her office is in a small room that was meant to be an attorney conference room. Off the hallway. So I think we're there now.
So, again, this other option that we've listed right here, the possible need to rent space, and that I'm probably going to change that change it for judicial services. Because, it, like you say,
court-related. To refresh everybody's memory, in the NCSC report, we had the circuit give us a realistic picture of how many people might be added over the next 20 years to either the clerk or court, you know, stuff that belongs to the UJS. And, like Judge Spears said, the most recent addition is a permanent magistrate in Cuyahoga County. And, yeah, she's in a tight little space.
Another thing, Markey's law, the constitutional amendment that went into effect in its current law as of November 16th in this state, every time I turn on a radio, whether it's commercial TV, radio, or South Dakota Public Radio, every state's attorney and every county in the state is considering adding more staff to comply with the requirements of that law and notifying victims and the victims' rights to appear at all criminal proceedings, for example. What impact that's going to have on the added staff in the counties remains to be seen, but I see it as adding staff in virtually all counties in the state, but that's my 2 cents worth.
Mm-hmm. We did have, there's an article in the paper today that I didn't have a chance to read about, that was about it, but we've gotten a little bit, just to kind of flesh out what Judge Spears was saying. The state's attorney came and talked to county commissioners a couple weeks ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago, when right after the law went into effect, and which is actually a constitutional amendment. And essentially, we fortunately have already had a victim services person on staff for the past, I guess, 20 years or so. And so for the time being, okay, the workload is going to increase for the state's attorney because of all the notifications that need to take place. But also, the interesting thing is the possible impact on the jail because of if for example, a defendant wants to do a plea agreement and the state's attorney thinks that's a good idea in their judgment, you can't just do that. The judge has to at least listen. If I understand it right, the judge has to listen to the victim. The victim gets a chance to say something. And so that can delay that process, and so the inmate, if they're incarcerated, they go back to jail before they can actually, before the judge can take action on that plea.
We have to make sure that the victim was aware of the court proceeding, was aware that a plea bargain agreement was entered into, and then at the court appearances, whether it be sentencing or the court appearance at the arraignment where the guilty plea is taken, in my opinion, under Marcy's law, the victim has a right to speak to the court on those issues.
What other states, again, does anybody know what Marcy's law enacted in? I believe California.
North Dakota, Montana.
Okay.
And Illinois. You're right.
They do some research there.
Mm-hmm. So we're anticipating at least maybe just single digits, but in our jail, that can be a significant thing. So we'll see. Okay. But anyway, back to.
So there's consequences. Again, we believe that reducing your inmate population is going to reduce your liability for things that have occurred in the jail.
we know for a fact construction costs is going to get more, and we know that you're going to have some space implications, some space requirements, some more cramp issues if nothing is done. So if the do nothing is no projects proceeded, the public needs to understand that has long-term implications. It's going to cost the county more. And the reason it's going to cost the county more is you're no longer, if you reduce your inmate holding capacity, the first thing they'll go is your ability to hold inmates for the neighboring counties, Hamlin, Dual, Clark, any other agencies. That $180,000 that the county gets now, your first thing is going to be, we're going to hold our own inmates, we're not going to house for others. So now you're going to potentially lose, depending upon your capacities, all or at least portion of that right away. At say you're at, based on that 62 number, that's kind of how we did this first initial impact, is I want to say, was it 7 or 8 for other counties?
Yeah, about 10%.
About 10% was other counties, about 7 or 8 was other counties. And then of that reduced number again, 7 would then be inmates in Coddington County that now have to be housed out of county and transported. Well, the way that's analyzed is we use $60 a day per diem for housing in other counties. And the rule of thumb has been that you double that cost for the transportation, for running them back and forth. So, again, that $300,000 is to house 7 inmates out of county for a year. So if you take that initial impact of lost revenue from other counties, potentially housing 7 out, that initial impact could be $480,000 a year. Your long-term consequences are that the inmate population is going to continue to grow, and depending upon how many inmates you're housing out, that could be anywhere from $170,000 to $250,000 or more, depending upon what the increase is. And if you were to take a look at the construction cost and inflate it on a yearly basis of anywhere from this 3 to 4%. Now, the state of Minnesota, when the state of Minnesota would plan, and I'm not sure about South Dakota, but the state of Minnesota, when they would plan a project, they used to use 6% for inflation per year. Well, that's high. That's on the high side. But they wanted to give themselves room for fluctuation. Years and years ago, I mean, I remember we were doing some projects and the price of gas spiked and it sent everything through the roof as far as what construction costs were. So you never know what from one day to the other. Even during the recession, we still had a 2 to 3% inflationary cost. Things were fairly flat, but we still had an inflationary cost. So most projects that we've been doing lately, we've been using 4%. So if we said that, if you were to say that you've got a 3 to 4% inflation cost on the estimated construction that we're currently showing you, that could, on the single-phased $33 million project, that's about $1 million, $997,000. If you were to do the two-phased approach and just do the jail initially, that's potentially about a $580,000 per year construction inflation cost. So again, if you roll all these together, if you look at all these potential impacts of lost revenue from neighboring counties, housing inmates out of county, and then increased the need to house more counties out of more inmates out of county, and the potential inflationary cost, if you add together the lost revenue from other counties, the initial 7 housed out of counties, and you even take on the low side housing some additional inmates out, and again you take the phase project of just building the jail portion of the first phase only, that can equate to about $1.2 million per year that would continue to escalate with inflation cost, increased inmates out of county cost. So that, does that make sense to everybody? Does it seem a little, you got to get your head around it a little bit to understand that there's a real possibility that could be about a $1.2 million per year cost to the county. Does it make sense to everybody?
It strikes me that even the initial consequences, that seems like a pretty level headed. It doesn't seem too
none of these
exaggerated, especially on the letter B.
None of these are excessive or high numbers. If anything, they're really a little bit probably on the low side. So again, you don't build anything. The voters vote it down. Over time, there's going to be cost to the county. Even if you don't downgrade your facility, even if you don't downgrade it, the reality is your inmate population is going to grow, and you're not going to be able to house them pretty soon. So these implications, even if somebody said, well, why should we downgrade?
fine, don't downgrade. You keep the high level liability, keep the potential suicide risk and the other things that the county is experiencing that can cost the county dearly over time, and you keep a higher risk to your inmates and to your officers. At a short period of time, you will be housing out because the inmate population will grow and the construction inflation will increase. So even if people don't think you need to downgrade, these other factors will occur over time.
And Bruce, that number, the 1.233, that's the first year.
Yeah, well, it's the first year plus the only nuance, Duane, is it does add an additional 170 of that potential increase. So it's taking the initial and some inmate growth.
I mean, yeah, because there's incremental escalation in every
per year. Exactly. Now we are going to add for the public presentation. What I told Lee that I'd like to do is add a graph that shows this, like every 2 years. What is that? What is that dollar value every 2 years? Here's what it is initially, because that'll help to describe that sum. Here's what happens in 2018. Say we started 2018. 2020, 2022, and really what's going to happen is your inflation of construction, your rise in inmate population, based on Garnos' study, based on the other things we know, is going to show an increased cost over time. So again, it's the do-nothing is not burying my head in the sand. It's saying over time it's still going to cost the county something.
Thanks. Any more questions on that one, guys? Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah,
that's good. I'll be good with them. That graph, I think, is going to be
We'll get that to you. Matter of fact, we'll get that to you before the minutes go out on this, so that everybody. Would that be helpful to get it to the minutes?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
the public meeting is what next?
Tuesday. Yeah, Tuesday. Yeah, a little less than a week. Yeah. Get to work. Okay. So just next thing is public presentation. This is the main thing to talk about. This is kind of the agenda we're thinking of, but we're just thinking of it right now. So, again, start off with showing the court and jail videos. You guys think that's not too redundant? I mean, it's a quick way of getting people up to speed, I hope, that you just show the problems of the courthouse, problems of the jail. And then one thing we didn't conclusively say last time was we had the criteria matrix, but we said this is a draft. So now we just need to say, okay, we used it, and this is how we got, this is what we used to get to those two options, the two site options of the auditorium block and 212. So those are fairly quick things. Been a lot of concern about historical preservation. I can talk to that maybe with a slide. I don't think I need to do a video or anything like that, just to make people aware of what actually is going to happen. And we had a question on the radio, and it's a good question. You know, he's concerned about historical considerations, particularly the auditorium in that case. And then Bruce just covered with the do-nothing option with the graph added. And yet, up to that point, I got a couple videos to show you guys just to get your thoughts on. So, any does that look okay? And by the way, Roger Weddle agreed to moderate. So that is really helpful. That was a great suggestion from before. That is having an impartial moderator really keeps us on track. Okay. So, and one thing we talked about last week was, so now we're on tax impact on the agenda. One thing we talked about last week was an overview of what happens to property taxes. So that's what this is. And so you guys tell me, this was actually not too hard to do, but the auditor helped me out.
Lee, I'm a little concerned about maybe that other property or other
I thought
revenues.
You might be. Yeah, I thought you might be.
I think that opens up discussion for... Well, let's talk about using these dollars then.
They're pretty much earmarked though, but it's there.
I would still take it out.
What
I
was your two columns? I didn't understand that when it showed the two columns of your.
Where? This one? Where are the two columns of the. That?
No,
that there?
Keep going.
Yeah, that's what Megan's talking about taking off.
I think it needs to come out.
Yeah, so this is just the stuff that's not. you know, like, say, we the two big funds that the county has are the general fund and the road and bridge fund. And
so, oh, okay, I see.
So that's just showing that stuff that's not really property tax. You know, we so for roads, for example, we get a lot of the state collects a lot of the license plate fees. So that's where that's where most of that number comes from. But I thought about that, but I wanted to show it to you guys.
No, I think it's good, but I think you give another opportunity to start another sidebar conversation that's just going to derail everything.
Okay.
I just keep it as clean as possible since we struggle to get this message out the way.
Yeah, I'll just keep it simple. Okay. So we'll just take, I can just take that slide out. So, and then, but the other thing was just to give people I hope it's not too confusing to have two pie charts, one with just a $100,000 house and then another one with all the taxes collected. So hopefully that's not too confusing. Anybody wants to offer an opinion, welcome to do so. And then this is I think we watched this one last week. This was the one that had that table in it. We did that last week, right? Okay, so that's pretty simple. But, and then I won't do that one again. And then we had
what is the average household in order?
I don't know. It's probably, that's a question for the auditor. I'm guessing somewhere between 1 and 200,000. If you take, because there's some really nice houses in flat places, but you know, most, I'd say that numerically probably most of them are in the $100,000 range. I would say. I don't know.
You mean for an average?
Yeah.
I would bet it's probably
150. 180. I was going to say
175 would be my guess. I think the average sales for last year were like 189 or, you know, something in that range. So,
yeah. So like,
so these are relevant. I
mean, is this going to be narrated?
This one may not be, but you have an opinion on narration? Narration helps a lot, I think, for some people.
This kind of stuff, narration would be wonderful.
Okay, I'll see. I'm going to try to line that up.
I know how to read pretty darn good, but the numbers.
Yeah, I'll try to do that.
I'm not sure where the gazintas are.
Yeah, yeah, okay. I'll try to get a narrator between now and then. Maybe.
Because you're right. I think the narration does help drive home along the points very clearly.
Yeah, it's just another videographer, sure. So that's. Okay, then we talked a lot about this. This is also not narrated yet, but we talked about this last week about getting this message right. Okay, so we simplified the options part extremely, and then
much better.
Do you think that does the job?
Better.
Okay, we got as we're having that discussion, I think Alan Brinkman was the one who said on the phone call that your message should be you're talking about your county. Okay. Yeah, thanks for everybody's help with that one. And then, let's see. Tiered ballot. I don't know how much we want to talk about that at the public meeting. Just kind of maybe at this point is about where we stop. So you're thinking, your opinion.
Say that for later. At this point,
Okay. If I get asked about it, we can explain things. But okay. Anything else on public presentation? I did have a really rough video on the jail shadowing. That's if that would be a good one, maybe to show up front. I don't know. It's a little bit longer, but it's kind of. I think you guys find it interesting. I'm gonna find where I put it. There's not a cool music track yet.
You can get the music from like Top Gun.
Yeah, that's copyrighted.
They'll never know.
Yeah.
Night seemed so hectic to me. There was always something going on, whether it was feeding them dinner, picking up dinner, delivering their meds, delivering their daily essentials, people that were coming in to have their ankle bracelet checked or do their breathalyzer.
Coming and going all the time.
The many tasks that were thrown at them on a constant basis, minute in and minute out.
So you've got people coming in getting booked, you've got people coming in doing their drug testing, you've got people coming into jail to get booked, and then you've also got people coming and going for work release.
Well, what's multitasking going on then?
That's a restaurant.
And then that kind of fire right here in the middle of one project, and all of a sudden somebody comes in for some other need, and that happened continually. different.
A girlfriend had tried to smuggle in a can of beer.
Now, there were two individuals that required medical attention, so one of the staff had to leave.
The psychiatrist was there. They do a profile on most, if not all, of the inmates.
Right when I got there at 4 o'clock, they were booking in people that were upset, and then they had the people coming and going for the drug testing.
And there was a minister there. Eight or ten of the inmates were sitting outside in the recreation area with the pastor. There was a woman who had to sign an affidavit to allow somebody else to take care of her kids while she was in jail.
Just tracking the meds, I would never have thought of that before, charting and, you know, logging in and dispensing and then following up to make sure the inmates were actually taking their meds.
Then dinner was served. The jailers are the ones who serve dinner.
As the food was being dispensed, there were two or three of them that were lactose intolerant. One that was the diabetic. One that could not have tomato-based products. It was lasagna that day.
Two inmates ended up getting into a little fight, and they obviously couldn't keep them in the same cell together. Then the process starts of, now we got to figure out who can we bring into this room, because they get along with everybody, and they got to know this right off the top of their head.
Just how busy they were, and to be operating in that small of an area, and they have to physically walk around and check on those inmates, and you've got all those people coming and going, you've got bookings.
Any given time, and I thought, what a chaotic night, and the jailer that was showing me around said, this is quiet, this is a Thursday night.
The facilities that they are working in are far less than desirable.
I guess the first thing that struck me is how cramped the facilities were. I mean, just everybody was working on top of it. I mean, we had, every little nook and cranny was utilized by an inmate or for some purpose. Not well laid out yet. You had to go downstairs and back and, nooks and crannies. And then when you start to look at the security aspects,
kind of reminded me of an old farmhouse that was kind of pieced together. That you had.
The kitchen is no bigger than the kitchen I have at my house. The laundry is in a small closet.
Just because of the logistics, it didn't seem like the building was functional.
I know they had some people downstairs, and there was other people down another hallway, and we had another open door where you had to go through doors, and there was actually people there, which I thought was part of like a warehouse, but there was actually people in those, or inmates in those facilities, which is... It wasn't just all one area right there. Like you see on TV when they pan across, you can see.
Up and down stairs. I was shocked that there were cells downstairs. And not just one or two. I mean, there were several people down there. So
and breaks down, and there's lots of laundry to do. And juvenile came in. And so all of a sudden they had to shuffle people around because the juvenile can't be housed with adults. And so he was in a closet, actually, while I was there.
Right. So they had to isolate one person because he was too much of a violent person to be in with other people. So that he took up however many, four or five cells within that cell.
How outdated that facility seemed to me. It was just an eye-opener.
A lot of blind corners, many cells that the jailers can't see the inmates in, unless they open the door and physically go in themselves, which, of course, subjects them to some danger.
But there's a good chunk of most of the cells where the staff is not able to view the inmate. And definitely a safety factor.
The amount of blind spots throughout the building?
They run back. They can't see the cameras, and they can't see the facility from where they're doing the booking. And that was, I thought, was kind of an issue, that somebody heard something. They really could be in an area where they couldn't be observed unless you actually walked in there. And not only through the first door, but the second door, there was other spots when you walked in and looked in the hole that you still couldn't see in there.
And in some cases, you're not able to see through that little window to see all the way around the corner who is over here and what are they doing. That's very difficult to just look in that window, because that window is just right here, and it's going in that direction. So when you're walking around doing your cell checks and looking into the windows to see, physically what they're doing, it's just a very small window. You open the window, you look, and you've got just that one straight straight ahead vision where you cannot see what's going on to the right or to the left. You know, you're just given this and you can't see because there's those individual blocks there and you can't see what that person is doing over here or over here. So it's really hard. So unless they open the door and physically walk in there.
Anybody who's been convicted of DWI is, most of the time, they're required to do two breath analyzer tests a day, 12 hours apart. That's at the jail.
One of the most interesting things that I thought was that was the number of people that came through to blow that breathalyzer. They had to come in like twice a day or once a day, probably twice a day. There was probably 60 people, maybe even more than that, throughout the time that I was there. And it was just constant. It was kind of like trick or treating. Every 4 to 5 minutes, someone's coming in.
They sit out front. They'll kind of buzz themselves to let a jailer know that they're there. But there were times where those folks would have to sit out there 15, 20 minutes.
And so people were constantly showing up to have a breathalyzer.
That's pretty rough, but you can.
Let's hold that one.
You think so?
Yeah, let's just wait on that one, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you think it's too... It needs to be shortened up some, but...
It's a little rough yet, I think.
Oh, I know. It's really rough. Yeah. I know that. No, that's... Yeah. No, it's not ready for prime time. Okay.
I mean, in my opinion, you know, back early on when you all did the presentation about the past reports and the conditions, mm-hmm. This speaks to a lot of that condition information. I guess my feeling is you should be somewhat past that. I mean, it should have been conveyed to the public. I mean, maybe revising this in a way to allow people to check it out on the county website might be good too. Mm-hmm. And they can go through it and see it.
Well, it needs, if I have time to polish it up, that's the question. But yeah, I wanted to show it to you guys because it happened. We took the time to do it. You know, the sheriff's office took the time to set up the shadowing program. So I wanted you guys, at least since you're on the committee, to be aware of that. And that's just a little teeny bit of the video. Pulling out, trying.
That might be okay for like a social media platform, maybe.
Yeah. At least that much. But yeah, maybe not the. Okay.
It showed the people go through it. It's somewhat of an eye-opening experience. That was pretty clear to see, even from non-correctional people, what the issues are.
Yeah. It's a lot of work to get it really, really polished. Cutting out all the ums. There are a lot of ums, but you can probably tell that those were upsetting. So. Okay. Well. Can you turn on the light, Dwayne? Okay. Anything else about the public presentation that any seemed like we got? I think that covers a lot of stuff. And a lot of what you have to do, there is some repetition involved to get the point across because we do have different people. And, you know, one of the things we want to do is communicate. And sometimes that's saying the same thing over again. Anyway. So.
The tiered ballot issue is going to be
We're talking maybe not doing that. We're talking, maybe we won't talk about it just at this public meeting. Mm-hmm. I mean, if people ask about it, maybe
you
not.
You didn't get an answer on that yet, though, did you?
Actually, we did. Good. I'm glad you said that. So the state's attorney had asked the attorney general's office, and they came back and said there's nothing in law that prohibits it. They just cautioned about being very careful with the wording of it, so it was very clear. So that was the main thing. Before the meeting started, we were having a bit of discussion about how much, you know, can we make it clear enough to make sure that people understand that, you know, it's two yes or no choices and how they relate to one another. You know, if a person is really in favor of, you know, the whole thing, the whole Justice Center, might they just vote for yes for that one and then vote no on the other, and that would cause it's better to make some progress than none at all. So those kinds of things. So can we make it clear enough? So, but we'll
right now we'll plan on holding off on that discussion at the public presentation. Okay. So, anything else on public presentation? Okay.
And then, are you going to be doing handout cards at all again?
Yeah, we probably should. Yeah, Oh, yeah. Well, we'll do. Yeah, I should put Q&A on there as part of the agenda.
But so people can fill out their questions and they'll go
yeah.
in and pick them up.
Yeah. Actually, the last one, I think. But the last one that everybody asked just directly. The first one, we had combination. Okay. So, now, the major thing that's going on, this is kind of the unfinished business that, that I see right now. The big piece that's going on is working with the city to figure out what the how feasible the auditorium block is, and so we're waiting on that. Hopefully, sometime middle of December, we'll be able to talk about that and get that nailed down. But that's something we'd really like to do before the not two public presentations from now. So there's the one on January 24th. So we want to be able to get that nailed down. So that public presentation is about what the recommendation is. Okay, so to include the ballot language. Okay, so the sub-bullet there, we're waiting on that appraisal result. The soil boring kind of goes along with that. That's in process. I don't think, that sounds like that's going to be pretty easy. We just have to pay for it, but we got a good price on it, I think. Since we're doing two sites at once, we save a few hundred dollars. And then we have to, once we get that information, we recommend an option. We decide what we're going to recommend to the county commissioners, and if the county commissioners agree, you know, so that recommending an option basically us to the county commissioners, the county commissioners to the voters through a ballot. So that's about, and coming up with the ballot language, and be that the tiered ballot, be it not to accurately state what we need to ask them for, and then coming up with an election date. Right, we identified a number of possible Tuesdays in March when the extension center would be. When it'll be possible to use the extension center, so that's we're kind of keeping that those things tentatively penciled on the calendar. But March was the month we were looking at, and but we can that's not set in stone. So if somebody has other ideas and you know other ways to think about it, and then kind of unrelated, and I think this is you know the message we need to send is that we're doing this for our county. If other counties want to participate, we're going to give them ways to do that. But that discussion will continue on in the background. So, and that's what I could think of. Does anybody else think of other stuff? So this is kind of like building up to that two public presentations from now, January 24th. Any other big stuff we need to do? Okay.
On right. January 24th, you'll have everything pretty well wrapped together.
Hopefully. I think that first bullet, you know, if we can get to, you know, I think to understand the feasibility of that option in total, we're going to need that first block checked. So.
Well, and you'll have the soil borings back. You should have the appraisals back. Yeah. You'll have our recommendation by then as well. I think probably somebody needs to start to draft that ballot language for you all to look at.
Yeah, I've been playing with it. It's not too. That's probably and get that checked out actually.
And then I think the biggest thing is how do you all go about making sure that the folks show up for the vote, you know, that everybody's aware of it, and you get as many people out as possible. You know, you've gone through tremendous expense and tremendous time commitment to make sure this has gone through and been available to the public, and it's been a transparent process. The sad thing was, if you go out for the ballot, and you get hardly anybody show up. You know, and the ones you get show up are the ones that didn't want it anyway. I mean, you've got to somehow get people to understand the importance of it and get them to show up, and that's a challenge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we but you know, and I think you're pretty helpful with that. That's some ideas on that one. So. How to do that. So, but there's a fine line between public awareness and advocating. So we'll have to make sure we do that right.
Yeah, I mean the reality is you're not standing outside the booth saying vote for me. Really, what you're doing is saying, you know what, your opinion is important. Please show up and vote. Mm-hmm. And you're trying to get the yeas and nays to all be there.
Yeah. Okay. So. No, that's Okay. Anything else? All right. Okay, then, let's see. If we, I am concerned that we might need another meeting in January between the two public meetings. What do you guys think that's true or false? And for you guys, you guys can just call in, I mean, just to make sure that this would be the meeting that we'd have the information, hopefully, you know, based on the city-county discussion about, particularly about that the auditorium block.
It would give
to sit down and say, this is it.
Yeah, and it would give all of you a chance to recap what you hear on the public meeting coming up, as well as the open-ended items that you're listing on there. You really want to have those discussed in this group before you, because I'm a believer that you've spent a lot of this time and you really want to hit this potential bond issue sooner than later. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to gain you a lot to continue to drag it. I think we've gone through all the aspects of it. Now it's just a question of when's the most appropriate time to put it out for a vote.
Yeah. So how did dates in January look for you guys? We want to try to squeeze it in right after the holidays, but you know, give us a week or so before the public presentation, because we're going to need a week to prepare that. So that's January 10th. Look okay for folks, or some other date in that time frame? Tell me what you think. I mean, seriously, we're going to want your...
Is January 5th an option for this group?
It probably is for me. That's a... January 5th?
Thursday.
Is that
okay? I can do the 5th or the 10th.
The only reason I throw that out is we are going to be down at Brookings, so...
Okay.
I'm just down the street.
Okay. Is that January 5th work for folks?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So we'll say January 5th. We're still probably going to meet at 6:10, so. All right. And then we may or may not need additional public presentations. You know, they'd be mostly reviewing but the information that hopefully we put out on the 24th. So, you know, we'll kind of see. I don't know what your thoughts are, but I would err on the side of repetition than, you know, leaving things out, because it gets frustrating to me to, as much work as we do on, you know, social media and stuff like that, and, you know, putting this on the web, you still say, people say, so what's going on with that? And that happens all the time. and the, you know, you guys have been good about putting it on in the paper. The radio's been good about, you know, letting us have some time. So, but it's still, you know, people are busy. So keep that in your mind. We may want to do one or maybe two more public presentations, depending on when the vote actually.
The good thing is, it's there, and you can say, "Well, it's here."
Yeah.
When they say that, you say, "Well, it's here." It's right on there.
Okay. Any other thoughts? Okay. About anything. Okay. All right. Well, if not hearing about any unfinished new or open items. A motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. So all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Okay, we're adjourned. Thanks.